Welcome to the Arts and Antique Radio Show, where your host, nationally recognized certified appraiser Elizabeth Stewart, Santa Barbara's treasure sleuth, will help you put a value on the treasures in your own home.
Every time it rains, pennies from heaven. Don't you know each cloud contains pennies from heaven?
So let's find out. How valuable is it?
Hello, 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 hello. It's Elizabeth Stewart, your chantress of everything valuable and beautiful. Today I have, you know, one of my friends turned me on to a book that was forthcoming. Lisa is my friend, and she's also helps people with the book ideas, and she's a book promoter and media expert, etc. And she just happened to say, well, you know, I've got this book coming out. I think you'd really be interested in it. She knows me for years. And this happens to be a book written by Dr. Shanti Mayberry, who I have on the program today. And I want to talk a little bit about the book, but, you know, it's a very prescient topic right now. And I think, you know, Richard is going to help me too, because Richard knows so much about this area. But the idea is that Shanti's, this is not her first rodeo. And what Shanti's saying to us is that in these times, we need to look to nature in a really profound way. And the book gives poetry. It gives practices. It supports well-being. There's a lot of uses for nature, and we are one with nature. She suggests wilderness adventures, mindful gardening, seasonal rituals, and tree and flower communion, etc. And I was intrigued because I'm so distant from that part of myself, and I shouldn't be. You know, where we are and where Shanti is, we're both very close to the ocean. And I, you know, don't. I used to go every Sunday, Shanti, and take a look at the breakers and this, but lately, I don't do that anymore, and it's craziness. I mean, I'm within, you know, a good long bike ride of the beaches and, you know, this sort of thing. And I don't know why, but I've become so embroiled with the labors of the world and the dissonance going on in the world that I just don't even think about, oh, well, why don't you get away from all this chatter, this monkey mind, you know, and get over there and look at the beaches. Richard used to go when he lived here in Santa Barbara. He's now way up. He's 5,500 feet up in the mountains now, you know, so he doesn't get to the beach anymore. But I used to see him take off with his hat on and go down. Right now, he's got enough communing with nature because he can just lean over his back deck or hopefully not fall down, because he'll fall down a mountain if he does. But, you know, there's, yeah, well, it's true.
Yeah, it is.
So a little bit introduction. Dr. Shanti does take clients, and I encourage you to look at Shanti Mayberry, her website. She's directed many, many different circles of healing, et cetera. And she is a depth psychologist, but she's a depth echo psychologist, a somatic echotherapist, which we're going to get into what that is. And she advises on holistic health, meditation. She's a movement instructor, and she's also been teaching for years at various universities. She has a PhD in psychology and MA from the University of New York, and a BA with honors from Berkeley, UC Berkeley. I was interested to see that she does some very special topics in some of her teachings, befriending. Well, this one is dear to my heart, Shanti, befriending and transforming pain. And then Richard and I are going to listen very closely, because we're going to celebrate same birthday coming up soon. Healthy sage aging, something that I think is super important. And then she does movement classes and meditative movement classes as well, and how this relates to the earth. And I guess I want to start by saying, Shanti, what was the inspiration for your book? How did you sit down and say, I've got this book in me? What started you with this thought?
Well, I feel like I have been writing it all my life. I've always been very nature-oriented and had some very transformative experiences in nature when I was younger. So my counseling practice, which I began almost 45 years ago, has always been nature-oriented. It's been an instinctive process. And I witnessed so many transformations in my clients when they became more connected to their own bodies, because we forget that our body is nature. We have an inner nature, but we tend to forget that our bodies are the closest part of nature to us. So they would awaken to their body's inner wisdom and also feel this incredible loving connection to the earth, which they hadn't felt since they were children. And they came to realize that the earth is alive and they're part of it. And it healed a lot of the anxiety and stress and actual loneliness that they felt. So I would say it's been an instinctive process to write the book. And it's taken me 10 years to finish it, to my satisfaction. So I think I had turtle medicine while I was writing it to be very patient and persevering with it, even though I hit some snags. So I would say that it's an expression of how I've been most of my life. With a lot of practices and information and research studies about how beneficial nature is for our health. They have, in the last couple of decades now, published hundreds, if not over 1,000, studies about how connecting with nature in a deep way needs to be deeply felt, will lower blood pressure, reduce anxiety and depression, activate creative inspiration, and a sense of the divine in nature, a sense of transcendence. While connecting to nature, and you feel that you are part of something so much greater than your small self, which is a relief for many people. So I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, it's how you began to think about the book 10 years ago. And I've got specific questions as it relates to why it's coming out, you know, in the next, what is it, next two or three months it's due to come out, right?
It will release on August 1st.
August 1st.
It's available now for pre-order, and it's called Come Home to Nature.
Okay, so Come Home to Nature, and it's available now. So a couple of questions. Why I wanted to speak with you now is because there's been so much going on, I think, in the world today, having to do with the differences between the inner life and the outer life of people. And Richard was referring to it before we even got on the air in his own way. And I was reflecting on, you know, as I mentioned to you in a couple emails, what I know as an art historian about the various movements around nature. And so, you know, just to kind of fill in listeners, what I'm referring to is the late 18th century throughout much of the 19th century of a movement in painting. Mainly we have Thomas Cole and Turner and these wonderful in Bierstadt here in the States. We have these painters that are tuned into both the what they used to call the sublime principle in nature. And so you have these amazing views. I mean, you go to LACMA, for example, Richard, next time you're in LA and take a look at Thomas Cole's, you know, the four images of the world and his sublime is always something that's sort of awe-inspiring, both in scale and also in the what we call the perspective. And so, but inherent in that movement, the late 18th century, so they're throwing away the sort of academic style that came before that is based on, you know, logic and measurement and, you know, the last vestiges of the Enlightenment, for example, in painting, which is all very academic. And they're going away from that into a sort of a vision of nature that is foreboding and wild and in some cases chaotic and sometimes very much in keeping with some of the philosophers of the time, both pro and con, who said, you know, nature, when Shanti used the term inner nature in the eyes of some of these painters at the time was that I'm actually afraid of that id in me that, you know, Freudian, that I might let out, for example, and it may spring forth, you know. And of course you have the wonderful literature of the time that has, you know, Jekyll and Hyde elements in a lot of the characters. And so, you know, there's what we're going through in our world today, this dualistic idea where Shanti's book, you know, Come Home to Nature, is a good antidote to that. So that's the background that I bring to what Shanti has made a life's work of. And what's so interesting to me, Richard, right now is, okay, this is going to be a little difficult to describe. So what I'm learning right now, I have an intern, Shanti, and I'm an appraiser. I've been an appraiser for 30 plus years. And my intern is a graduate of Courtauld in London, and she teaches art history at one of our universities here. And so I'm teaching her what I know as far as appraising. And she's teaching me in exchange what she has learned through her students and also through university. She's much younger than I, about AI, artificial intelligence. And so for the last couple of months, I've been working on something that she and I in our project have called, you know, in the beginning, there was the word logos. And so our code name for what we do together for me to study and really get in depth into artificial intelligence, how to use that in an analytical tool in what I do, we're calling logos. And it reminded me of this idea in the philosophy that I'm referring to, late 18th, early 19th century. You know, the world was in the beginning the word. Okay, so, but the idea of nature is not necessarily an individual approach to anything as man-made as the word. However, we're seeing the power of the word and how the word can take off and create a universe, albeit it's syncretic as versus synoptic. But we are seeing how right now I have students that I teach, Shanti, that can't really write words anymore. They can only manipulate the words on their tablets. So if I ask them to handwrite something for me, it's an almost impossibility. Well, I was thinking about that in terms of, you know, wild nature, chaos, the inner nature of, you know, this, the, what's really inside could be scary. versus the idea of nature as divine and transcendent. And there's both polarities, I think, you know, in nature. I wondered in these times when I've really been trying hard to think about artificial intelligence and what it's doing in my business, what it's doing, what it's capable of, for example. And Richard, I'm going to tell you something. I'm going to send you a wonderful lecture. So there's a person that I, Rupert Sheldrake, who I love the way he thinks, and also Ian McGilchrist. They're two scholars based in Cambridge, and they did a lecture on this sort of topic we're talking about. The word in the beginning was the word, you know, the first lines of a holy text. Okay. And what they say about AI, and I wanted Shanti to talk to us about this. They said it, you know, give a quote. The AI, for example, is reductionist, which we know. And they posit that we as human beings are vastly superior. But, and I love this quote, Shanti, but we are hypnotized by this self-luminous machine that's called AI. I love that. Hypnotized by the self-luminous, because the machine looks like it's doing what we do, but in some ways it can't, but it might, but it can't, but it can't, but it might. And there's my dog chiming in. Hey, Slinks.
All right. We don't hear him. We don't hear him.
Tell us what you think about this idea. How do you cope with, you know, this? What I was thinking is, here's an author, Shanti, here's an author that's using words to describe something that is so transcendent of words, yet her vehicle is words. And then she's compounded by the fact that she's publishing today in a world that's really dominated by artificial intelligence and the editing process. I was even thinking so far, Shanti, is the first book I wrote, which is kind of a test book. I wanted to see if I could do it. I actually had a human editor. I actually would bring my pages in physically on paper to an editor. And that does not happen. How did you do it?
Well, I'll say just a couple of things about our digital world and AI, and that it is obviously very addictive and very hypnotizing, and we get fascinated by all of the information and our human dramas, and we get spellbound by the digital world, which affects us tremendously. As Richard Louv says in his books, we have nature deficit disorder. It's starting to affect our brains, especially children's brains. They see fewer colors now, hear fewer sounds. Most people spend much of their time inside, glued to screens, right? Some say it's 90% of the time, which is not how we evolved. We were outside. Our ancestors were outside hunting and gathering herbs, et cetera, et cetera. They were not inside all the time. So it's very different than how we lived. I mean, even a couple generations ago. So it's very important that we learn how to break away from this addiction and get outside and restore our brains through communion with nature. And the other thing about AI, it is fascinating. I did most of my book editing by myself, but I did use AI a little bit, and it was helpful. But we have to remember that the digital world is just a subset of the biosphere, right? I mean, there will be no cell phones or tablets or computers on a dead planet. So we need to get our perspective about it straight and try to balance all the screen time with some outdoor nature time. That's my sense about the whole digital world. And my feeling is, and I did write about it in my book, is that we need to move into a new paradigm. I think you mentioned that also, Richard.
Mm-hmm.
So I refer to Thomas Berry and his book called The Great Work, where he says that our task now, our collective task in the 21st century, is to move into an ecological paradigm so that we put Earth first and we organize our institutions around the fact that we are absolutely interdependent with nature. We have no separate life. And we are suffering in a paradigm of hyper-capitalistic industrial growth that's supposed to be endless, and patriarchal imbalance that is harming us. It's causing suffering. I've seen that over and over again in my individual practice with people, that their issues are very much connected to the imbalance and the sickness in our culture's mainstream mindset. So that's, you know, nature reconnection is not just about feeling better by restoring our bond with Mother Earth, but also recognizing that we need to move into a new cultural era. And before that can happen, of course, is enough individuals really need to experience how beneficial nature is for them. And then little by little, it becomes a collective wave of change. So that's one of the things that I do promote in my book.
So, all right. So I want to bring this down into a more practical level as well, too. So in your book, I know that that there are some ideas of practical things we can do to open that door. And I want to just see if maybe I could lead you to something that really intrigued me. This is a called Befriending and Transforming Pain. And I want to talk about that only because I'm selfish. And so, you know, Richard knows I'm an ex-dancer. So I've had a lot of issues, you know, having been in ballet for many, many years. And so I'm on my number fifth hip replacement. And at this time, I've had the last year, I haven't been able to walk very well, if at all, because I've had two fractures, you know, caused by a problem with the last prosthetic that I had. So, you know, I live with a lot of pain. And so when I saw this about you having recovered from severe nerve and back pain, I wondered how you, I mean, I don't even want to think about befriending this kind of pain. I want to think about drugging it away. And, you know, trying hard not to do that with any opioids, but, you know, it's, I do have two doctors that say, well, Elizabeth, it's really time to do those opioids now. I don't want to do it. I want to think of another way. And, so far I haven't really discovered any buddy that said what you said about befriending that pain. Richard is close to this too, because Amrita, his wife, has had some issues as well. And one of the reasons they moved, of course, is the air quality. And you know, so anyway, do tell us, what would be a therapeutic solution? What would you counsel someone with chronic pain? And I can't hike anymore, for example, you know, and so if I go out, it's in a wheelchair. So what would you suggest? And Richard's giving us time. We have a couple of minutes before we go to our next break, but enough to get started. Shanti, give me a program. Give me an idea.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry you are facing so many issues, Elizabeth. I do know what it feels like to be in chronic pain. I had a serious fall that caused the spinal and back injuries and sciatica, and I did have to have a hip replacement as well. So what I have found, and this is an approach that people in holistic health will take, is that the body is wise. It does know how to heal itself with the right support. Is that after I experienced the fall and the chronic pain became very severe, instead of fighting it, and that you want to give yourself a lot of kindness and forgiveness, that is an instinctive thing. We do not want to go into the pain. We want to stop it. We want to just come back to being normal. So that's an instinct not to go there. But what we need to do is perhaps counterintuitive, which is to address in a loving manner the area of pain. So instead of avoiding it, pushing it away, pushing it down, trying to drug it out of existence, which I know is instinctive, and I've been there too, we address the area of pain with compassion and a willingness to understand. And so it becomes a meditative, contemplative thing where we are learning how to dialogue with the pain in the body in a kind, gentle, loving way. And oftentimes, if we can hang in there, and I know it's a, you know, you have to stay with it, right? You stay with it. You can even put your hand on the area, another hand on your heart, so you're sending warmth and love into that painful area. We listen. We listen for the body's response. What is it you need me to do? We're saying internally, what is it you need me to do? And we're listening for however the body wants to speak to us, right? Might be in an image. It might give you some movements to do. The body knows how to move in a certain way, instinctively, to try to balance itself. So I developed a lot of internal slow movements that actually enabled me to get out of the severe back pain that I had, to avoid spinal surgery. And I did take some cannabis oil internally, which can help tremendously. I would try that before any kind of, you know, oxycodone or any of those types of drugs. You can get a special combination of oils that have CBD and CBN and, you know, some THC, but they can help tremendously. They can help tremendously, not only with softening the pain, but enabling you to go into it and communicate with it. So that's what I did. And it took a while, but I hung in there because I didn't want to have spinal operation. if you can avoid, you know, more and more operations, that would be good. The other thing that you can try, and this is pretty amazing, is castor oil packs. So if you don't know what they are, it's one of Ayurvedic medicines, most loved remedy for all kinds of ailments. So you can check it out on an Ayurvedic website. And it's also something that Edgar Cayce recommended for all sorts of ailments. But you can use the castor oil with a warm heating pad on the area, and it can sometimes start to dissolve the pain. For instance, now I have very severe arthritis from the fall in my shoulder, and I'm using castor oil on it. I'm doing certain kinds of movements. I'm communicating with it, and the pain is diminishing tremendously. So I can tell you that it works. It may not be an easy fix, but it gets to the root of the matter, right?
And you're saying castor oil.
Mm-hmm.
And you're taking it internally or applying it?
No, you're applying it externally. So if you have a lot of hip issues or shoulder issues or back issues, you can use this castor oil, which you put on. You can actually warm the oil first in a little bit of water that's been boiled. Then you put it on and you put a little cotton cloth over it, and you put heat on top of it, and you can keep it there for maybe 20 minutes or so, and you can add more oil, but it's going to start to lubricate the joints. It's going to tremendously help with movement, mobility, and the easing of inflammation.
Have you heard of this, Richard?
It sounds familiar, and I know castor oil is, in a manner of speaking, good for what ails you topically. It's actually quite remarkable.
It is. It can be miraculous. I've used it for over 50 years for all kinds of issues, and I swear by it. So if you want to know more about it, you can check it out on an Ayurvedic website. And you can experiment with it yourself to see if it does bring benefit. But I have found that it's pretty amazing in its ability to ease pain, lower inflammation. And that's the other thing you want to do with any kind of, chronic pain. There's inflammation. So you can take an anti-inflammatory like Wobenzyme. It's a little bit expensive, but it'll tone down the inflammation, and that is another way of helping to decrease the pain. So
before we go to break, tell me again, you said something?
Wobenzyme. It's a little bit complicated. The other one is Vascuzyme. But if you go to a natural health store, a vitamin store, and you ask for an anti-inflammatory, they'll probably recommend that.
Huh. Well, that's interesting. Three things I didn't know. Well, castor oil, my grandmother did that, strangely enough.
It's an ancient remedy. It actually means the balm of Christ. It's been used for thousands of years for all kinds of things. So I highly recommend that for any kind of chronic body pain. And I'm using it now to great effect on my shoulder.
Well, let's go to quick break, Richard. And when we get back from the break, I want to talk a little bit about Dr. Mayberry's work with women, especially. And then Richard and I want to hear her opinion or how nature is to be used in an anti-pathological way regarding aging. I want to hear about that as well. So let's go to quick break, and then we want to talk about how women's issues are addressed in her book, Come Back to Nature, Come Home to Nature, and how she thinks about aging. And she did share with us her amazing age, which she does not look at all. And so she's had a little bit of experience in this matter. So don't turn that dial. Back with Dr. Shanti Mayberry in 2 minutes, even less than that. It's Elizabeth Stewart. I'm talking with Dr. Shanti Mayberry, who's written a book, and I can't wait to pre-order it. It's called Come Home to Nature, and she actually is a practicing eco-psychologist and a somatic ecotherapist, and she was on the air just now giving me personally some advice on how to cope with chronic pain. And she was telling Richard and I about castor oil. I mean, I would have never have known. And then she's also recommended some Ayurvedic anti-inflammatories. I thought Tylenol and Motrin were about what was going to be, in my future. But it looks differently now. After speaking to Dr. Mayberry, she's also going to talk to us a little bit about her insight into some women's issues today. And I heard an amazing story just this morning. So I'm studying with a gentleman who does a lot of dance therapy in a heated indoor pool. And so I'm doing a lot of anti-gravity type movements that, this is how my body's saying, let's do this in this pool kind of thing. And he was, before he became this type of therapist, he was a trainer for track and field at one of our universities. And so he mentioned to me just in passing, I said, I'm interested to hear what you had to say because you trained both men and women. Were there certain things that, you trained especially for women or especially for men? And he said, I'll tell you what's really interesting to me in many years of training. He said, if you start two sprinters on a really short race, the man is going to win. But if you start a man and a woman on a long race, let's say a 100-mile race, they're going to come in together at the final end because the man may have the power, but the woman have endurance and they have tremendous endurance. And I said, why? Why do you think that is in your world of athleticism? I says, I have no idea, but I've trained both male and female athletes in track and field for years and years. And the women, that's why when you look at the marathon races, they start men and women together at the start line. Because generally they have at the very final end of a very long race about the same capacity. And a man or a woman could easily win depending on the length of the race. So women have a special role. Obviously we've got some challenges in today's world, but Shanti, tell me about your reaction. What do you do with the sacred feminine in your practice?
Well, I honor it for one thing, and encourage my women clients to do that as well. The goddess tradition has always been important to me, so I do bring that to the surface. And the other thing that I found is very helpful for women who have difficult issues that they have to confront is grounding. So grounding practices where you are actually anchoring yourself in the Earth's energy matrix through the feet can help women stand their ground when they have to deal with abusive issues in relationship or difficult work issues, and even divorce conflicts. One woman that I had as a client many years ago was about to lose everything in a very, very heated divorce conflict. And I gave her grounding exercises to do through her feet. And she was able to confront the lawyer and her soon-to-be ex-husband in such a ferocious and righteous way that she won a very big settlement. So I would say, you know, being assertive can be a difficult issue for women when they have to have a difficult conversation with their partners or at work or whatever. But if they feel really strongly connected to their bodies and to the earth, they usually can persevere in a very beneficial way. So I would say grounding issues for women have been very important.
What would an exercise look like for grounding?
Okay. So I use a Tai Chi exercise, actually, which is called the horse. And it's where you you take your shoes off so you can really feel the connection stronger. You can do it inside or outside. But you bend your knees just a little bit. Your legs are about a shoulder's width apart. You bend your knees just slightly. And then you envision yourself with roots growing down into the earth and the power of the earth coming up through your body. And one of the ways in Tai Chi training that we would test someone's root, which is a term for grounding, is that we would have them do that horse exercise, and then a partner would come behind them, and they would be the person who was doing the horse would really envision themselves as part of the earth force. So their partner would come behind them and try to lift them up, and they would not be able to, even if that person were much lighter than they were. It's an astounding demonstration of the power of grounding. And it's what's used in the beginning of Tai Chi. Before you do any movements, you have to be able to have a root that's that strong. And the opposite demonstration also is astounding. So the person is in the same position, right? They're in the horse position, but this time they're not envisioning themselves as being connected to the earth. Rather, their energy is up in their head, which is usually where most of our energy is during the day. We tend to be head people. And so in that instance, when their partner came behind them to pick them up, they were as light as a feather, and it didn't matter the weight, right? So I think that's the most astounding demonstration of how much more powerful we are when we're connected to the earth than when we're not, and our energy is just up in our heads.
How fascinating. Fascinating.
Yeah, it is fascinating.
One of the things, Richard, it's so funny that Shanti's saying that. One of the things that I'm doing in the pool is, you know, in a situation where, you know, there's not, I'm up to my neck in water, and the instructor is behind me trying to knock me over. And so that has to do with the fine tuning of the muscles in the body as well. So I sort of know what Dr. Mayberry is talking about. You know, Richard, do we have to go to one more break? Okay, one more break. And then I want to just quickly talk, because we don't have a lot of time, but I wanted to quickly talk about aging and what that means in terms of Dr. Mayberry's work. So let's go to a quick break. We get from the break. Just to reintroduce Dr. Shanti Mayberry's new book, Come Home to Nature, date of publication, August the 1st. Pre-publication, take a look at Dr. Mayberry's website. Shanti is spelled S-H-A-N-T-I. and Mayberry is the way you'd expect it to be. And so you can take a look and pre-order your book. Okay, Richard, quick break. And then I want to hear what Dr. Mayberry has to say about aging. Don't you?
I do indeed.
Okay, back in a minute. Welcome back. Reintroducing Dr. Shanti Mayberry, and this is her new book, Come Home to Nature, Align Body, Mind, and Soul with Nature for Personal and Planetary Well-Being. And Dr. Mayberry is in her eighth, can I say that? Yeah. She's in her 80s, and she's been practicing what she's preaching in her entire life, and so she's been actively counseling her clients in regards to the aging process. And I'm interested to know what Dr. Mayberry thinks about, we were talking about before the break, we were talking about grounding exercises for female clients of Dr. Mayberry and how important it is to be grounded and to be focused. And I love the use of the word righteous. And so, all right, so we're afraid about our aging. Richard and I were laughing that NPR says that, you know, congratulations, America, the average age of death in this country is now 70 years old. And so we're really not happy about that because we're halfway there. So what do you say? What do you say to a client who is ageophobic?
Well, you don't have to believe that. You don't have to believe what you're told by convention. Nature, I think, it provides us with the possibility of infusing more energy into our bodies and also being wisely guided in the choices that we make. So when we connect to nature, we are plugging into a vast network of energy and intelligence, which is going to support you no matter how old you are. But it's especially helpful as we grow older to have this source of extra energy and intelligence that we can tune into. And it's right there, it's outside your door. So that's one way in which nature connection can assist us in aging well and wisely. And also by observing how nature cycles through various seasons of flourishing and then decay. And so the aging process, of course, contains the fear of dying. But the more in tune we are with natural cycles, especially if we garden, we'll see that it's just what happens, that these cycles of blooming and coming into fruition are concluded in decay and rebirth. So I think that those two things of having a source of extra energy and extra intelligence that you can tune into is great. Also, nature connection can calm you down. So if you're having an anxiety attack, going and communing with nature can calm that tremendously. And then observing the cycles of nature makes it easier to accept that are flourishing will also end in decay and then renewal. So that gives us a kind of faith, and I think it eases fear, the fear of dying, a lot. And of course, nature provides sources of great beauty and awe and wonder, and all of those are excellent for uplifting our psyches and making us feel like life is worth living, as we can be the witnesses of so much beauty and so much wonder.
Before we go, tell us one good exercise that you would give a client who is maybe facing a sort of an end of life decision or end of life scenario, or is aging quickly and can see that there's going to be an eventual end and it won't be all that long to wait. What exercise would you give a person like this?
Well, my favorite exercise for calming down anxiety of all sorts, which I still use regularly, is to lay on the ground. And you can do this outside if you have a secluded place, on your porch or in your backyard. Take a blanket and choose the space that feels most safe and secluded to you. Or you can do it inside. And you want to gradually deepen your breathing, have a good deep belly breathing, and slowly let your body relax down into the mothering earth. If you do this outside, you can feel the earth underneath you gradually pulling out the fear of dying. And you can ask for guidance, you can ask for help, you can ask for the Mother Earth to hold you. She is a living, breathing, intelligent presence. You can actually start to feel the earth, even if you're inside, because the earth is underneath everything. Even if you're inside, you can feel that slowly, slowly, the pull of gravity is taking out the charge of anxiety and giving you instead a sense of steadiness and a sense of being held. So that's my favorite to go to exercise, which I've done since I was a child. It's very powerful and very simple, but it can change your brainwave. The earth is actually in a meditative state in many areas that are not disturbed, a theta vibration, which is meditative. And you can activate your parasympathetic rest and digest system. So you come out of these mental loops of anxiety and fear. And you go down into a much deeper state where you're being held by the mothering earth. So that's the practice that I use a lot. It's my favorite one. And it's,
well, we've got some really good ideas of what some exercises and some techniques that Dr. Mayberry has suggested to us. And before we have to go, Shanti, people that want your book, what's the best way to pre-order your book?
Oh, it is on Amazon right now, available for pre-order. And it's called Come Home to Nature. The subtitle is Practices to Reunite with Mother Earth for Healing, Joy, Guidance, Love, and Awakening. And it's about 240 pages.
And so it's and Dr. Shanti Mayberry, let me spell it one more time, Shanti and Mayberry, Mayberry, and she's the author of Come Home to Nature. And we've been talking with her about the book that's going to come out August the 1st, and some of her go-to exercises that she's given us, you know, having to do with grounding, having to do with laying on the earth itself when you're fearful or have anxiety, and also a really good one for pain, Richard, that I thought was really interesting, to commune with that body part and to actually give the body part some lubrication. That's kind of interesting. And of course, we have the Ayurvedic ideas that Dr. Mabir was saying, this castor oil and some of the Ayurvedic anti-inflammatories to take us away from these sorts of opioids and these liver and kidney destroying medications that our doctors like to hand out to us. So some really good practical advice as well. And I think you'll probably hear from Dr. Mayberry again soon on this radio station, if I'm not mistaken, because I think Richard will have her on Tell Me Your Story, Richard's actual radio station as well, maybe closer to when the book is going to be published. And I can't thank you enough, Dr. Mayberry. Thanks for speaking with us and giving us some really solid advice. Not you know, really welcome, too, in these days.
Well, thank you both so much. I've really enjoyed our conversation. And
Richard, maybe we'll say goodbye and then I'll get off the line and you can talk with Shanti, okay?
I will, yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. Bye, Shanti. Thank you.
Bye-bye now. Thank you both.